This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well. I'm Mark Lintermeyer, a philosophy overlord who's over the moon to learn improv.
And I'm Bill Arnett, an improv teacher, let's go simple, who's excited about learning philosophy.
And we have two guests today.
I'm Jill from Huge Theater in Minneapolis, and I'm philosophical and improvisational.
And I'm Michelle Gilliam from Improv MKE, which is virtual, but I live in Milwaukee right now. And I'm philosophical.
So this is only the second time we've had guests, and we thought we'd just make it really complicated right away. Just have two of them.
Yes. And just so everyone's clear, we didn't rehearse this at all. This is improv. This intro was completely improvised, and they're just throwing this out. And Jill and Michelle heard Mark and I label ourselves. They're like, well, I need to come up with one too. Because they're outstanding improvisers that we have on the show with us today. Do you see how improv works, Mark? Do you see how improv works?
I'm beginning to see. This is the 18th, 19th time we've done this. I'm beginning.
Yes.
It's starting. So the general format, each of us, Bill and I, have prepared a lesson, a very modest lesson, something that if we just told you it, we could probably describe it in about a minute. But we're going to draw it out and we're going to discover it with y'all. We're not going to just state it up front and we're not going to take turns. Any questions?
No.
Perfect.
So when we're done, you two will, between the two of you, decide which lesson produced the most profound effect on you, on the learner, on the other one of us, on the listeners, on a posterity. So it's a big responsibility. You got to pay attention. But of course, you're not just sitting in the wings. You're not just judging. You're participating, being in the scenes, having the talk.
Yeah, I'm constantly judging.
As you should.
Now, Mark, usually we do decide who gets to go first, and I don't recall what you decided thought would be a good first.
So I thought, in particular with this large crowd here, that I should just throw out a word, and then you can start a scene, and if you want to have one of our guests, or you know, however you want to start the scene, so that you can facilitate whatever lesson you have in mind, which I know is a little restrictive, because if your lesson is not having a topic, well, too effing bad, because I'm giving you a topic. I'm giving you a word, at least. And the word is utopia. Or utopias. I don't care if it's plural.
How about utopian?
I suppose.
Okay.
Utopiating? Utopiary?
I think we can let that word trickle into our subconscious and start an improv scene here. And I'm so happy to have you all as guests here. Not that it's unfun improvising with Mark, but it's additionally fun improvising with other people. I'll get this thing going and we'll go from there. How about that?
Sounds good.
Hey, everybody. I called everyone into the break room here. I just wanted to go over the new vacation policy that just came down from corporate.
Yeah, Tony, I got the packet, but I didn't really look it all the way through yet.
There's a lot in there. There's a lot in that packet.
Thick. It's a thick packet.
Yeah.
What are the colors? What are the color tabs? It seems very elaborate.
Yeah. What do the colors signify?
I read the whole thing. It appears that we get unlimited vacation time.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. But then the rest of it is all the restrictions around unlimited vacation time. So.
What do you mean? What, like you can only go certain places?
You take all the vacation time you want, but you have to let someone know. All right. And that person you do let know, they have to let their one up know as well. And then that one up then emails back to verify, if I'm getting this right, to re-verify. You get unlimited vacation. I mean, let's be happy about that. So that's exciting, right?
Can we turn to all of us to the pink tab? Can everyone turn to their pink tab in the packet? I noticed something here. Behind the pink tab, it says you cannot adhere to any limits during your unlimited vacation. And then it lists some examples.
Yeah.
Like you should conquer all of your fears.
Yeah. I read that as just kind of HR, you know, hey, I don't know what it means. Honestly, I don't know what that means.
Quick question. If we could go to the blue tab, tab.
Thanks.
The light blue or the dark blue, which I've got.
Sorry, medium blue. I apologize.
Okay, sure.
So. Royal not light or dark.
Okay.
Yes. So it says, if you so fancy, get yourself 1,000 yellow daisies a day. But if you don't fancy that, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything that I saw was in italics. I figured was an example. So I'm not sure if that's... Look, y'all, I got the same packet.
Will the daisies be provided for us, or is that a personal expense?
I don't believe so. I think that's just an example of what one might do on their vacation.
I like daisies, but I don't know if I'd want 1,000.
That's a lot.
Yellow every day.
Gail's right. There's like a limit.
Then let's not get them. Let's not get them. Okay.
I'm confused.
But I do like them, though.
Can I just ask about the black tab? And for some reason, the black tab is sort of, you have to, it's kind of stuck. Like there's some substance in here.
Mine is stuck too.
Yeah. Are they were mass printed. So there's like some sort of sticky substance in there.
Is this like a secret page? Did we find like a bonus track on the?
Is this written in blood? I don't really. What is this? It's red. As a policy? Cyan. Is this that new like VP that they brought in, that external person? I thought you were going to get the job actually, Tony, but who is the source of this?
I believe this just came from HR. I got in the office and this was on my desk and I just figured it was HR, VP, employee, relation.
It says, I am not a sorcerer, nor am I the devil. That's kind of odd.
Doesn't that go without saying?
That's very odd.
Doesn't feel official, but it is written in blood.
From something? Is that a quote from something?
Should we be worried?
I don't know.
This sounds like a prelude to layoffs to me. This doesn't kind of irrationality in the sector. Maybe it's just trying to stop the unionization that's coming down the pike.
This is craziness. This is absolute craziness. All right? Daisies?
I mean, but we all have, you know, tenure. We all have time in. So, I mean, we can't be...
You know what? I'm going to take the plunge. Tony, this is my notification to you, my higher up, that I would like to exercise my unlimited vacation starting today, starting now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm triggering the orange tab.
Okay. All right. I'll begin filling out the thing here.
Jill, are you okay? You're looking like suddenly the... kind of pale, like the words you said had some physical effect on your I don't think I want to exercise my vacation right now.
I feel like gravity doesn't apply to me. I feel like none of the laws of thermodynamics. I feel inertia doesn't exist.
Okay, no one else go on vacation. No one else go on vacation until we figure this out.
Oh my gosh, Jill is floating. Jill, you're floating. What is happening right now?
Oh gosh.
You're wearing like an 18th century gown or something. Are you...
I see my grandmother and she's happy to see me and I see birds, all the kinds of birds, even extinct ones. There's a dodo here.
Okay. No one go on vacation. Honestly.
I like dodos. Wow. Okay. I'm going to invoke vacation.
Yes, Gail.
No, please.
Join me, Gail.
I'm telling you, Tony, and so you have to tell your higher up.
Please don't do this. Michelle, please.
Ooh.
Bill, maybe you actually should. Tony, call the higher up and just see what...
Okay. There's electricity in your eyes. There's electricity in your eyes right now. I don't understand.
Ooh, I feel different.
we got Q3 ending on Thursday, okay? So we really need to get our numbers figured out, okay?
I'm just going to start working right now. I'm going to sit down. This is too much.
Does anyone else see that big bunny rabbit in the corner?
Yes, I see him.
Wow.
Okay, do you still want 1,000 daisies or...
Make it 972.
Very specific number. And scene. We did it.
Whoa.
That's the awkward part about this show is when things end.
Well, and can I tell you, Bill, something that I came into this with was a determination not to end the scene myself, not to try to solve it, not to get nervous that this was running too long and... have some sort of deus ex machina that would wrap things up.
That's something we have talked about. And to our other Michelle and Jill or other improvisers, if there's ever a moment you want to jump in with a little baby lesson or an amen to the things that Mark has learned, jump right on in.
That's a good lesson to not try to end it internally. I think that's, Michelle and I both have taught a lot of beginning improv classes. And I think that's the funniest moment when the student like stops and looks at you.
or they hug because another, like, they think that that's the end. I have let so many scenes go longer than the hug because they think that solves everything.
Do they ever jump in the air and freeze? And then it's like really awkward because it's like keeps going
and they're frozen. Yeah.
And then I was trained in Michelle and I were both trained in comedy sports short form, where there's often a funny last line where you're like, well, that's going to leave a mark. And if the scene goes past them,
people freak out, freak out.
So that's something we've been laying in and working on is that, you know, you play to the whistle, play through the whistle and not presuppose the end. Yeah.
Curious, Bill, how did you feel like that related to utopia? How did that word influence what you're setting up here?
Well, I know exactly how that affected me. And I go to workplace scenes probably far too often. I don't know. Did you guys detect, Jill, Michelle, did you guys detect anything utopian in there?
Well, I think what's fun about how we handle utopia in literature and media in general is that we are always looking for the dark side of it.
Totally.
There's no movie or book where the utopia is great and it's like, bye, folks.
Yeah, we're taught in every aspect that there's a cost to goodness, so to speak.
There's a man behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. There's something.
Yeah, unlimited vacation was the first thing. I had some friends in the workaday world, and they mentioned that a new trend of like businesses having unlimited vacation. And that was like, oh, well, that's interesting. I wonder what the realities of that are. And of course, it becomes pretty horrible immediately. Jill and Michelle, yeah, not even a moment of celebrating. It went right to.
I had that at a job. I was a manager for a large company, and you could take off whenever you wanted, as long as it basically didn't conflict with something else major. Even if it did, as long as there was coverage, you could take off whenever you wanted.
I had a job like that, but it was unofficial. Like nobody knew. I could go to lunch as long as I wanted and no one would notice. And then I would come back. There was a library right across the street. So I could just go to the library for a little while and then go back to work. No one noticed.
I lived in Boston at the time and I came back to Wisconsin and other places 8 times that year. And it wasn't even taking advantage. I literally had a lot of deaths in my family and it sucked. But I was also grateful I had the time to be able to do that. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And those deaths presumably were in return for that flexibility.
Right, of course.
Well, based on this scene, yes. There is a pound of soul for your unlimited vacation. So, Mark, go for it.
Well, I'm wondering maybe we could do, since we have 2 guests, 2 short scenes that each one of you sort of initiates to maybe more directly, but at least as directly as in Bill's case, give us a flavor of what you think either utopia might amount to, or just play with the concept and do something goofy with it. I don't really care that much, but something that is, instead of my just asking you, what do you think utopia is? I want to do this through the magic of improvisation.
Okay. We'll get back to utopia having a dark side, right?
Well, that's maybe that'll come out during one of these things, or maybe it won't. Maybe you want to challenge that suspicion that you have to have. Maybe it's just a story trope, but has nothing to do with like what an actual utopia would be. Michelle, do you want to start?
Sure.
Are you going to be playing in these scenes, Mark?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Very good. Okay.
I mean, a minor role, 4th on the call sheet.
Sure.
I wanted to be the first to share with you all. We have run out of breadsticks.
This is Olive Garden.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
We're finally here. We're finally free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just right now, if you don't mind, I'm going to make a sign and put it on the maitre d' stand, the host stand.
I encourage it.
But this policy is, it's bottomless. It's never ending breadsticks. How could we, I don't understand. How could we run out of breadsticks?
Things happen.
Yeah.
It's the whole foundation of the enterprise. I mean, it's like that people come for the breadsticks. That's what this place is for.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Look, Mark, I don't know what force of nature has made the breadstick being empty. All right. I don't know what cosmic thing, but I'm not going to question it. I'm saying that right now.
The supplier was a whole thing, corporate situation, but we're done. We're out of that deal.
There are people, so Mr. Miller over there has been, according to my watch, 53 years has been down here eating the breadsticks.
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing that was designed for him. What? No more breadsticks? What, are we just like go back to poking him with sticks or something?
Mr. Aaron Miller, table 17. He has come here every day for the last 53 years. And today, you, Jonathan, get to tell him that there are no more breadsticks. I wish you the best.
Did you know that Aaron Miller has a son in Cincinnati who he has not visited in 53 years because he's been forced to come here in pursuit of bottomless breadsticks? Finally, Mr. Aaron Miller is free to reconnect with his son.
We're all free.
Wow.
We're no longer beholden to the breadstick gods.
Somehow we've spun off this Mobius strip. And we're adrift in a carbless infinity.
I'm just going to poison him. There's no good way to tell him. Let's just wrap this up.
Okay, this conversation is not ending right there, Mark. We're going to continue talking. Don't poison our customer. Okay, where's the right there? All right, Jill, you want to start a utopia here? We're two for two with workplace discussions.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you can go
for
say.
Three here.
I thought I was thinking for a second we were in hell and that the people were being punished with breadsticks.
Oh, maybe.
And Jill reinterpreted that, my 52 years thing, in a different way.
Wow.
If I had just said 155 years, then it would have been more clear that this is some sort of afterlife breadstick prison.
If you had said afterlife breadstick prison, it also would have been more clear.
I didn't want to hog the conceptual spotlight. I wanted to just throw a little tidbit out there.
You simply must, you tease.
Michelle, what was your thought in starting that things are so wonderful that running out of breadsticks is the problem and that, or?
Yeah, because people are so addicted to those breadsticks. It's like, that is the utopia. You're talking about a guy who's there for 53 years. That is not far off the beat, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, we still don't go inside of restaurants, but, you know, every time we go and do pickup, it is packed. And so I'm just like, this is nuts. And people are addicted.
So. And I'm sure we've all met people who have figured out how to, like, game the Olive Garden system.
Probably.
Like yeah. You get the large Alfredo.
Actually, I do that.
And you share it, and you can run the breadsticks in the Alfredo sauce, and like.
My husband is a former Olive Garden waiter, server.
Okay.
Whoa.
And he told me a hot tip, at least when he worked there back in the 90s, the breadsticks were just made of Wonder Bread.
Really?
Wonder Bread from a bread plastic container just literally dumped and like reconstituted?
No. The factory Wonder Bread also conformed some of their Wonder Breads to be stick-like and froze them and sent them to every Olive Garden in this fine nation, at least in the 90s.
Wow.
I don't have current intel.
I doubt they've upped their game since the 90s.
I mean, if you're winning, why change your strategy?
Exactly. If it ain't broke.
All right. So we got a glimpse into Michelle's mind. Jill, do you want to start us off on another adventure here?
Yeah. Can I confess something to you guys?
Of course.
Like, I always thought the post-apocalypse would be like depressing, but I don't know how you feel, but I'm really grooving on it. Like, I love it.
Once you get over the grieving period with all the dead people, I mean, it's very spacious. We got until the fuel all goes bad. I mean, things are going to get bad eventually, but for now, it's pretty awesome.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking right now. Like 6 months ago, I was so worried about how I'd keep my clothes clean. And now I'm just dressed in furs and metal that I found, and I feel great.
I feel like we don't have the same dress code standards and restrictions. I feel amazing.
Mm-hmm. And there's no media pressure to be hot or beautiful, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Whatever that
means. You're beautiful right now. You look so beautiful to me.
Thank you. I went into a JCPenney that had been completely just picked out the clothes that I wanted to wear, that I always wanted to wear.
You.
And that society said I couldn't wear.
Just all pajamas all day? That was your choice?
Yeah.
It's very comfy. I mean, I'm not mocking it.
And can I tell you something? This, I used to have to make time to go to the gym, but now I get all of my fitness just by, you know, hunting down feral dogs and avoiding zombies. Like I feel I'm in better physical shape than when I was paying a personal trainer $180 a week. I'm in peak condition.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it shows. And it's pretty important because, you know, I don't know, we got to repopulate. We got to use all the possible combinations among us. But it's still nice to, you know, to put in some effort.
What I'm saying is the effort is effortless. It's great.
We also agreed to table repopulation until we discussed if we even want to bring anyone else into this world, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. I know that always gets put on the back burner, but, you know, I want it on the agenda somewhere. Maybe next quarter.
Put a pin in it.
Okay, fair enough. I do think it would be fair, though, Mark, that if we do have to, as you say, have every combination exercise, that I think a combination that may not come to our minds is you and me. Is you and me, Mark. And even though that's not...
I've definitely thought about that. I mean, it's just...
Okay.
It's like for group cohesion... You got to have all the combinations. I think, I know you didn't want to talk about this yet, but this now you've opened the floodgates and I feel like all four all the time. Like the, you know, no jealousy, just a complete group experience. And that would really be the ideal.
You know what? Let's put a pin in it. Put a pin in it.
Uh-huh.
Maybe next quarter.
Let's think about it. Let's feel about it.
It seems like a little, there's some more zombies or whatever the hell they are at the gates. Should we go sure. And, you know. Kind of thin the herd out
Before
we talk
Let's
more about
go
this.
Thin that herd, everybody. Hands in the middle. Thin the herd on three. Yeah. One, two, three. Thin the herd.
And now we hug. Now we look awkwardly at Michelle.
Yay. And I let the scene go.
Tell us about the... How Utopia prompted that, other than this is a momentary feeling of something. Was it all just on the surface of what that character was saying in the first line?
Well, this is what's interesting. When you're using the same suggestion multiple times, it's your responsibility to run at it from different directions. And we'd kind of already run at it from Utopia. So I wanted to look at like the other side and see what if dystopia was, we'd already looked at what if utopia was dystopia. Now, if we could look at what if dystopia was utopia, because we have this opportunity when we're doing more than one scene on the same theme to hold that theme up to the light like a prism and see all the ways that it shines. So that was my impulse. Yeah. What if dystopia was your utopia?
Let us stop and talk about our sponsors. First, BetterHelp. We all want to be happy, but sometimes things get in the way, and it's really helpful to talk these out. And BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can connect in a safe and private online environment. It is so convenient. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. Just to clarify, this is not a crisis line, not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. You can send a message to your counselor anytime. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without having to leave your house. And if things with this counselor doesn't work out, it's easy and free to change counselors. The service is more affordable than traditional offline counseling. Financial aid is available. The service is available for clients worldwide. BetterHelp has licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, self-esteem. Anything you share is confidential. I encourage you to check out the testimonials posted daily on their site. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/improv. Join over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/improv.
St. John's College is for undergraduate and graduate students who seek meaning in their lives, who ask hard questions of themselves and their world, and who dare to free their minds. In small discussion-based classes, students grapple with fundamental questions that confront us as human beings and engage with influential works by some of the world's greatest writers and thinkers, from Homer, Plato, and Euclid to Nietzsche, Einstein, Wolfe, and Baldwin. This strong commitment to collaborative inquiry and to the study of original texts makes St. John's College a particularly vibrant community of learning, where students participate in lively discussions and immerse themselves in translating, writing, demonstrating, conducting experiments, and analyzing musical compositions. Through this, they learn to listen deeply and across perspectives, and to speak and reason with precision. Explore 3,000 years of human thought in just 4 years, or two for graduate students, on campuses in Annapolis, Maryland, and Santa Fe, New Mexico. Learn about our undergraduate and graduate Great Books programs, including online graduate options at sjc.edu/improv.
Do you read Post Secret? There was this Post Secret posted this week. It's a collection of secrets that strangers write in to this person who has a mailbox. And someone wrote in about how the lockdown for the pandemic had really been the highlight of their life, and they got a raise and they got a promotion and like lost a bunch of weight and were having a great time. And it's a secret because you don't want to say that out loud, that, hey, mm-hmm. hey, this is the most horrible part of recent history, but I'm having a blast. Yeah. I'm maxing out.
Yeah, I love it.
I love what if in improv. Like, what if the thing we assume to be true is not?
I love that take.
Yeah, what is the thing that seems to undermine whenever we visualize a utopia? Why does that immediately, what is it about that sort of ideation that makes it immediately turn to dystopia? Is it really just storytelling convention and it's more interesting that way? Or is there something about the concept of utopia that's unstable?
Well, I think for me, it's like utopia is not utopia for everyone, right? Even to what we can imagine, my utopia is very different from what you guys might imagine, because what I currently face is very different from what you guys can imagine on or off the stage. So I think that that's kind of the thing. It's like utopia is not utopia for everyone, right?
It's not universal. And even in the scenes we saw, there were minor disagreements or minor frictions between people, for sure, for sure.
So does that mean for a utopia to be stable, then sort of human nature would need to be deformed so that we all like the same stuff or something like that? Or is it just that's a lack of imagination on what utopia would be, that we don't all have to be utopias, unlimited breadsticks, because we all love breadsticks? Like that would just be a limited idea of what humans want.
The idea of a utopian society, like you would buy into being in that society, right? And if breadstick utopia was the utopia for me, I would move to Idaho or wherever that's taking place.
So utopia is six or eight different utopias that are in a confederacy of utopias, and you could pick which utopia you wanted to live in. Okay.
My utopia is the warrior utopia that conquers all surrounding utopias.
Well, no, only that's not part of our utopia, but that's not part of our utopia, the being conquered. It's something that jumped out of all these was this notion of like choice and freedom in terms of like some restriction has been removed, you know, having to hawk breadsticks, or you're not allowed to be sick, you know, a vacation time, or you're not allowed to, you know, with Jill's things, that society has all these things that requires of us, that when those are gone, that somehow that's a positive to be relieved some. And that kind of popped up in all the scenes. And you know, certainly to Michelle's point, people's utopias being different, that definitely speaks to that too. We all have different pressures or things that are asked of us, or things that we have to, life has thrust upon us that we must endure, and that being relieved of those things might be unique for each of us and also our sincerest wish or dream or our personal utopia.
Yeah, what I liked about Jill's was that it was a freedom of the mind, right? So it's like, we have these outer restrictions and then we have these inner restrictions, but there was already, because it's post-apocalyptic, the outer restriction. And then there were the previously considered restrictions, you know, from society. And then all of that's pretty much gone. So then you get to, like you said, choice, right? Like, how do I feel? And what is my perspective on this such that this is my utopia?
Yeah, you have some agency.
Yeah, really cool.
Now, Mark, typically, for y'all's benefit, He may have some wisdom from the ancients, or as I've been referring to it. Clearly, I'm presuming, Mark, that these discussions have taken place in more formal academic settings for millennia. Is that true?
Well, see, you're always overstating my knowledge of the field and the ancients. Certainly, there are versions of this in different novels. I mean, the sci-fi dystopia stuff that comes out now, you know, these are all sort of in a tradition. I've never actually read like Thomas More's book Utopia, but I did look it up on Wikipedia today, and it's very idiosyncratic to him. There are, per Michelle's observation, there are slaves in his utopia. Like, that's not, doesn't seem cool. But it's temporary and you can get freed for good behavior, but like you might be put into slavery for adultery. Apparently he didn't like adultery, but he thought that in his utopia, the priests would be allowed to have sex. So that it was a critique of the Catholic Church. He has particular beefs that he wanted to show. You know, it's like the particular things that he found to be too tight strictures, and like at least those are going to get loosened up.
Does utopia include doing something that the bad people get their comeuppance? Is that included? We did something we didn't discuss in any of our scenes, but like, is that also part of utopia? That the users and mean-hearted people finally get their comeuppance. Is that also part of utopia?
Yeah. What do you think in your sort of ideal society? Because in your ideal society, usually people just aren't doing stuff like that.
Well, yeah, you don't have to lock your doors anymore. But does that mean there's no criminals if you don't have to lock your doors, or there aren't users or people who would take advantage of those freedoms or choices to be cruel? And what happens to them?
The dictionary definition says an imagined place or state of things in which everything is perfect. And I love that Thomas More felt some obligation to have the making of perfection part of the, you did, like, he didn't think about like, oh, maybe just not have it or not have it be frowned upon. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. There seems to be, you know, I'm kind of getting to the point of revealing what I was getting at here. But, you know, there's some relation certainly between what you think the utopia is and what you think human nature is, right? So if you think everybody just loves breadsticks, or everybody should love breadsticks. So, and this is kind of where we get into the, you know, maybe the slide to dystopias is because maybe you don't think people right now, like as Bill was just saying, like, well, there are people right now with all their vices. If they're put in a heavenly situation, maybe they're going to take advantage of that. They're going to take advantage of each other. But no. In a real utopia, people just wouldn't do that kind of stuff. Maybe you have an idea of human nature that says the only reason people do stuff like that is because we have money, because we have greed, because we have a marriage system that inspires jealousy. Like, so we just need to somehow arrange these social forces so that people don't act out. I mean, what do you guys think of that? Is that even, if you were designing a utopia?
That's interesting. I was literally just having this conversation on the drive up to Minneapolis a couple weeks ago, where I missed Jill going up to Huge Theater because of what was on the news about the Haitians coming to our country, and also on misinformation, but then the images that were out there of them being treated as if they were slaves. So anyway, you know, we have a lot of the Afghani people coming here, welcoming with open arms. But anyway, I was thinking, is there a way, like, I would, if I had like unlimited funds, I would want to like buy this land out west where any person of African descent could come and live. And there's really no system for money. The recommendation would be that you volunteer in some sort of fashion at least 4 hours a week, because I want people to have purpose, you know, and of course they can do more, but everything is provided, you know, schooling and housing and just anything you could possibly imagine. Anyway, that's kind of one of my utopias, is making sure that all African peoples are taken care of all over the world. And I want everyone to be taken care of. And right now that is the one of the biggest ones that I can imagine, because it's just not happening.
Now, there's something interesting about human nature. And I think there are definitely people on the more right side politically who their fear is someone got something for free. That's like the worst fear in the world. Someone didn't earn something or deserve something. And so many of our versions of utopia, the price is, well, you're a human. You deserve it because you're a human. You know, you don't have to do anything necessarily to earn anything beyond just being alive. Yet, to your point, I can't just snap my fingers and make the 70 million people who voted for Donald Trump suddenly not feel like people don't deserve stuff for free, angrily feel that no one deserves anything for free. I don't know how you square that circle. Jill's notion of multiple utopias.
That's why we need multiple utopias.
Yeah.
Right? That's why we need multiple utopias. Because to me, utopia would be having all of your needs met. And I think there's a lot of needs to be met that we don't cover, like the need to have your generational trauma healed helps in addition to having food and shelter and water and comfort, and the need to have your white fragility deeply examined is a need that could be met. I don't think I would never skip that in the list of needs being met, because I was thinking as we were talking, like the reason for me personally that utopia leads to dystopia is because I never fully trust it. I'm always waiting for the shoe to drop. Like, this is going too well. Something will go wrong. And I don't know if that's a bigger phenomenon, but it's at least a personal phenomenon where I'm waiting for the banana peel to interrupt my gait. I was once walking in the New York subway and I was like, wow, everything's going great. And I cartoon slipped at that exact moment on a puddle on the ground. And my legs just went up like cartoon legs. And it was so funny to have happened while you're thinking the exact phrase, wow, everything's going so great.
Do you think that fear that something's going to go wrong is human? Or do you think it's your own? Or
I think it's human. I'm sorry. I know you're asking Jill, but
No, please. That inside all of us is this like radar of like, things are going too good. There could be a saber-toothed tiger behind that boulder.
Is some portion of the population really confident? And I have an experiment I want everyone to try when you're ever, you're like I sit at the desk at Huge, at the front desk. And if you have a plate of cookies that has no sign on it, just a plate of cookies, homemade on a plate, there's a percentage of the people that will walk up and take one. There's a percentage of people who will say, can I have one? There's a percentage of people will say, how much do they cost? And then there's a fourth group of people who will sit far away and like give love glares, like just stare longingly at those cookies.
And not know what to do about it.
Yeah. So I think there's a percentage of the population that assumes the world is designed for them. And they're just going to take that cookie and they think utopia is forever. But there's a bunch of us that are like looking at that plate and thinking, that can't be for me. That can't be for me.
Who would not put a sign there? Clearly, that it's in transit and just put it there.
There would be no a one sign. Just, if it was for me, there'd be a sign.
There's also a percentage of the population that doesn't eat what other people cook. So.
Yeah, this is a pre-pandemic experiment.
Yeah,
there's a percentage of people who don't eat sugar either.
Yeah, I make it or it's a prepackaged non-perishable. Nothing in between. Yeah.
Merely pretending the cookies are not there, because like if the social cues are not clear what to do with it, you just completely disregard it. I would think that would be another the logical
matrix. Really enjoy it. It's an experiment I invented accidentally by having a plate of cookies sitting next to me. And I was riveted all afternoon.
That's fun. You could get a grant for that, Jill.
This feeling of something inevitably going wrong, I mean, that could just be related to some theory about all systems break down eventually. There are limits of the optimality of any system, or it could be something about, you know, maybe human nature just will not actually allow for a utopia, that you could give us supposedly everything we need, and maybe we would create our own bullshit dramas, and sort of there might be a net as much suffering. That's the idea. I think the term is the hedonic treadmill. We would just adjust. People adjust to the worst circumstances, right? They have sort of the same happiness level sort of worldwide. I think this has even been measured something. And if we have more privileges, more pleasures available to us, you know, we'll just still be just as miserable. We'll just create problems for ourselves. For me, that's not an argument for not trying. I'd love us to be free of poverty and want, but there might be limits.
So Jill, I totally relate to, you know, the whole like, oh, just everything's going too well, you know? and then waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I've been consciously for the last few years, just like taking that thought and just making sure, like, it's like, hey, everything can go okay, Michelle, you know, like just kind of like talking to myself. And it works for me anyway. I can't say it'll work for everyone, but like, that's where I'm just like, I think it's a human thing. I think it's like, for a lot of people, not everybody, but like, it's just like, oh, something's going to happen. But like, I don't know. Lately, it's been feeling really good the last few years.
Good.
That's great.
Hey, Bill, we should start to unravel what your lesson today was.
Well, I think y'all have done a fantastic job of doing my fulfilling my lesson. And I'll give you a hint, Mark. This lesson all started with the very first emails shared between the four of us and what they accomplished to enable this moment to happen, which I feel was quite utopian.
Something about familiarity and chemistry and feeling like you know the people that you're doing a scene with, even if this is the first time you're doing it with them.
That improv, and I know we can talk about it, and certainly when Mark and I get to chatting, it can get very engineering heavy, lots of protractors and graph paper, but at its heart, it's social and it's even quasi-spiritual to regard as well. And even though we may have advice and do this, don't do that, and tool belt analogies, everyone's coming to this as an individual, and everyone's coming to this with their own thoughts and feelings and hearts and brains. And we shouldn't see that as a problem. Instead, we should see that as a strength. Now, what allowed us to have this free conversation is all of us kind of agreeing to kind of a set of ground rules. And this is how this works. And this is how, you know, almost like a miniature society between the four of us. And I think it's fun when you have improvisers from all around the world come together and play. They have this gear they can shift into that is, this is how this works, this society works. And it's generally really positive and peaceful and approaches utopia, I feel like. I don't know if anyone, if Jill or Michelle have had a chance to go to big improv festivals and things. And it's nice to like, you got a place to live, you got something to do. Everyone has the same rule book and is there for the same reason. And suddenly, the only problems that exist are, how late do I want to stay up drinking? And and any interpersonal problems. You get that small glimpse for a long weekend of what society might be able to be.
We've had to get smarter over time and highlight what Michelle was talking about, that utopia is not the same utopia for everyone. And I think now we do a better job of paying attention to the needs of the individual inside of the mini. But there is great commonality worldwide and immediate yes. community.
And Michelle, you said you do your instruction over the internet, right?
So I do. I mean, obviously I did in person before, but I'm not doing anything majorly in person right now. I'm doing a few shows here and there, and I did one jam. Yeah.
So how does the lesson about this being social? It seems like it would be a very different dynamic. Both maybe more nerve-wracking, but more intimate or whatever. If we were all in the same room doing this, any thoughts on sort of how that affects Bill's lesson?
It doesn't for me. I've had 130 jams of thousands of people that have come online. It doesn't. I know for some people it does. I would say, I mean, this is me just guessing, just making a guesstimate, but like probably only about 10% of like improvisers who were hardcore improvisers before the pandemic are online now. I think we're getting a few more now, which is weird because like there's like you can do in-person stuff now. But I think it's just as social, and I think it literally opened up the world. I've met people that I would not have ever met, or maybe would have met once at a festival and never spoken to them again unless they had social media and really would have forgotten much of the experience. But now created bonds and friendships and relationships that just were not possible before. So the social aspect ramped up.
So I'm wondering, can I borrow money from you guys now? Is that...
Well, now that we're a family...
Can you drive me to the airport? Was there any other thoughts? I feel like we've talked through the utopia thing quite a bit. Any other thoughts on... I feel like I already said what I was trying to get at, but I'm happy to give you each a final stab at the topic or...
Can I ask Bill a quick question?
Sure.
Did you say quasi-spiritual?
Yes.
Do you listen to Abraham Hicks? Do you know who that is?
I do not. They use the phrase quasi-spiritual a lot.
No. There's just some language you used today. And I was like, I wonder.
Well, it's that whole notion about like what makes a church, you know, and it's this shared thing of beliefs and as a degree of faith that you're going to take on these behaviors and take on these things and you're going to have faith that it's going to work and it's the right thing. And sometimes improv can do that, especially I bet there are little rules at Huge and little rules at MKE that are like, if I were to show up, I may put my foot in my mouth or I may not know when to stand or y'all may say the Lord's Prayer a little bit different. You know what I'm saying? That when you have those little societies, these little spiritual unspoken rules kind of grow up in a fun way and in a bad way. It's just an observation about groups. That's all I got.
Bill always brings a lot of quasi spirit to the table.
Yeah. Not a real spirit. It's just quasi.
All right. Well, I guess we've reached the moment of decision. No, it's not personal. It's not that the philosophy represents me. It's the lesson that Bill brought to the table versus the one that I brought to the table. Which do you guys want to confer? Do you want to come up with independent? Do you want to put them in the chat? How do we want to do this with two people?
Can you say your lesson again, Mark? I'm sorry.
That's always a good sign.
Ouch.
It was the relationship between an envisioned utopia and a picture of human nature. So
got it.
That it's always, you know, if you think we're all just pluralist, you know, we all have different natures, then that seems to be what maybe we all have common needs that, you know, some bare necessities that would be great if everybody took care of those, you know, if those weren't something that we had to worry about. But beyond that, it seems like, you know, we should be able to pursue whatever we want. And most of the utopias that have been envisioned, and the reason that they go so quickly to dystopias like Brave New World is because you come up with a sort of a shallow theory of human nature. Like everybody just wants to be happy. Okay, well, let's drug everybody so they're all happy. That's basically what happens in Brave New World. In fact, let's genetically engineer people so that they are just not going to be misanthropes. And we just have to somehow breed that native dissatisfaction out of us. So it's just getting at the relationship between those two things. You know, even though I think utopiaizing is out of fashion, people are just like, that's not realistic. Like, it seems like a useful thing to figure out what your view of human nature is. Like, are people just inevitably, you know, miserable and conflict driven? Or is it really just, you know, that we do have some social structures, like maybe the existence of money or the existence of monogamy or whatever the thing is that you think is too restricting, that if we just were able to get rid of those, then people would not be so tortured.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. I remember now.
So what do you think? How were you impacted? How were you both impacted? And just so you know, this is just kind of I wouldn't say phony, but it's just kind of a fun little thing. No one's...
There's only a little bit of money riding on it.
I was going to ask.
Wow. I think I have to go with Mark, as much as it kills me as an improviser, because I think it is very individual. I'm so sorry, Bill. I know our friendship is long and now it's got this blemish.
All right. Do we have unanimity or do we have a split decision?
We have a split decision.
Oh, there it is. There it is. Thank you, Michelle.
What did you enjoy about the improv lesson that will inspire the world?
I learned that, well, I mean, it's something that I feel anyway. I feel like, and I don't know, it's a little bit both of your lessons. So it really hit me when you said quasi-spiritual. Like, I am not a churchgoer. I mean, I started going when I was 11, but my parents didn't take us to church or anything like that because they wanted us to make our own choices and decisions. But anyway, when I was introduced to improv blew my mind. And when I started performing improv, that is the most spiritual that I feel when I'm on stage and I'm fully connected and I'm fully present and I'm listening. And to me, that is improv when you're in that moment. And so what I learned is you can do this with anyone if you're fully present and you allow yourself to have fun. I don't know if that helps at all, but that's
fantastic. I certainly enjoy they voted for.
All right. Well, a split decision leaves everyone happy and yet no. So that seems
just
probably
like
the optimal like utopia that we could come up with.
That grows for next week.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you. Hugely, hugely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pun intended on hugely. Thank you.
Yes. All right. So long, listeners. Thank you for listening. We like you a little bit. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Get more at philosophyimprov.com. If you want to support the show and not have to hear any more commercials and get our post-game segments where Bill and I and sometimes guests will elaborate on some things that came up in the episode, reflect on the future, and share our recommendations in the philosophy and comedy worlds, you can see options to do that at philosophyimprov.com/support. Thanks. I should sell my soul. Bankrupt. Bankrupt. Bankrupt.